This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time to talk that talk, and we talk it like no one else.
This is The Stinking Truth.
Now, here's your host, Mark Schlereth.
Hey, welcome into the Stink Truth Podcast. Mark Schlereth alongside Mike Evans. A big weekend, combine weekend. Mike saw a lot of dudes running around in their underpants. It was awesome, man. I love it.
Don't say it was awesome because you are being snarky right now. You're being sarcastic.
You think
the combine is a big joke?
I don't think it's a joke. I just think it's
overrated.
I don't know. I just saw a lot of things like a tight end caught one ball and had another ball in his hand. Like, this is an unbelievable. No, it's not actually unbelievable. It's very believable. And then I got this list. My boy Trey Wingo and I used to joke around about this all the time. But I got this list that Trey tweeted out, and it was just funny to me because it is so true. You know, and it went through over the last several years, the fastest 40 times recorded. So I'm going to go ahead and throw this on you. Like, 40 time is not an indication of whether you can play football or not. It's an indication of how fast you are in your underpants, okay? And so here it was. Xavier Worthy ran a 4.21 40 this year. Fastest ever recorded in the combine. Let me just give you a list of names of the fastest guys at the combine over the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, and you tell me how many of these guys that you remember.
Okay.
Okay.
This will be fun.
Kalen Barnes, 4.23.
Nope.
2022. Okay. How about, you remember this guy, Chris Johnson, 4.24, 2008.
Oh, is that Chris?
The running back.
Yeah. He rushed for 2,000 yards, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you got to give him credit, right?
Legit, yep.
Dree Archer, you remember him? 4.26.
I do, but yes, very forgettable.
Yeah, very forgettable. Tyreek Woolen, Pro Bowl corner, although this year had a little bit of an off year, but it's rookie year. Pro Bowl corner at 4.26. DJ Turner, you remember him?
No.
Nobody else does either. Marquise Goodwin, he played for a while.
Yeah.
Henry Ruggs, Jacoby Ford, J.J. Nelson, Jalen Myrick. I mean, stop me when you've heard the guy that's going to the Hall of Fame. Tyreek Thornton. Nate Wiggins, John Ross,
just a lot of
Dedrick Woods,
just a lot of Jags out there. A
lot of 4.28s, 4.26s, 4.2.
So Xavier Worthy, step right up.
Yeah, and I guarantee you, if I did the bench press at the combine, the top 15 bench pressers of all time, I bet you there's not one dude on that list that you would go, oh yeah, I remember that dude. Oh, yeah, that guy had a great career. Being able to bench press 225 for a lot of reps is not an indicator of whether you're a good football player or not. It means you're a good bench presser. That's all it means.
Mm-hmm.
And, I always joke around with the bench press, you know, test in general anyhow. And one of the worst bench pressers I ever played with was one of the best players I've ever played with. Tommy Nalen was terrible at bench pressing. Guys should be in the Hall of Fame. He should be a Hall of Fame center. But he was a great football player, and from a leverage standpoint, he was one of the strongest players I've ever played with, even though he did not, the bench press did not equate to his field strength. So, you know, again, these are indicators, and they're fun to look at. The problem is they become bad evaluators. Desperation makes for bad evaluation. And what ends up happening, I think, a lot of the times in the combine is you see a guy that runs real fast that you didn't necessarily see on film as popping out to you, as making a difference. And then you're like, wow, that dude is really fast. Let me go back and let me relook at the film. And then you start to make excuses. Oh, well, yeah, he was open there. The quarterback just didn't get it to him. or, oh, man, he, you know, whatever. Whatever your excuse du jour is, you start to paint the guy in a different light based upon his vertical jump, his bench press test, his, you know, 40 time. And so it creates really bad evaluation. I think for the first round, that's where it does the most damage. Because you start to convince yourself that based on some guy's height, weight, speed triangle, that he's a better player than he actually is on film. Now, I think for lower round guys, the guys that make up the majority of your team, oftentimes it will help you. Because you'll be like, shoot, you know what? Let me go back and look at that guy. This guy has done unbelievable. Like, his numbers are really good. But the most important thing is, like, his movement skills really impressed me. So maybe I didn't really study this guy like I should have, or I didn't really see a ton of film. Let me go look at some, like, instead of just looking at the highlight reel of this guy, let me go back and really dig in and watch some film. And I think for the first round, it does nothing but pollute your evaluation of what a guy truly is on the football field.
How often does speed truly show up as a difference maker in a game? Like, how many times when you're calling a game every week in the NFL, do you say to yourself or during the broadcast, you know, the fact that that guy was a 4-3 instead of a 4-4 guy really made a difference on that play in this game? Does it show up as much as maybe we'd like to think?
Yeah, I think just flat out speed. Sometimes it shows up in that it opens up underneath routes because you're so conscientious about staying on top of a guy with speed that it will widen the gap that you're trying to exploit underneath, you know, in that intermediate throwing area. So that has an effect. There's no question that that has an effect. The awareness of a guy with speed. Now, elite level quickness, to me, Tyreek Hill, is probably more important than flat out over the top speed. And it's how quick you get up to speed, too. You know, so that becomes more of a factor. So if you want to look at 10 and 20-yard splits, that would probably be more important than the 40-yard split. So I think some of those things equate differently. Again, how do you get through cone tests? How do you get in and out of breaks? All that kind of stuff. That stuff, to me, is probably quite a bit more important than your straight-up 40 time. So I think there are times where speed does, you know, does factor in to your ability to, you know, your ability to win on Sunday. But it's not the end all be all. Like, I'll give you, for instance, when we throw a go ball in the NFL, a good go ball comes down, like, I think it's between 41 and 45 yards. So when you're throwing a deep ball, deep balls aren't off of 7-step drops, right? Because receivers in this league will outrun quarterbacks' arms. So a good go ball is supposed to come down between, you know, between the numbers and the sideline, somewhere split the numbers and the sideline, at about 41 to 45 yards, somewhere in that realm. So all the go balls are thrown off of 5-step drops with no hitches. So a good go ball is going to come out really quickly. So this is one of the things that a lot of people don't understand about protection. If we get an all go, you know, a call like all go to me as an offensive lineman means that's a 5-step drop where the ball's out right now. So I understand the timing of that. So now all of a sudden I can treat a 5-step drop that's all go like it's a 3-step drop. I can be more aggressive in the way I attack the line of scrimmage from a pass protection standpoint, because I know how quickly that ball has got to come out. So it gives me another tool in the toolbox to be a better protector, because all of a sudden I can go, okay, this is like that guy's never going to get to the quarterback if I just get my hands on him, even if it's only for a split second, because that ball has to come out so quickly because we're throwing a go ball. And where that ball comes down. So there is an effect there, but it's not like you're going to drop back 7-step drop and hold on to the ball, because those receivers, like, I can't throw it 78 yards. And that's where that guy's going to be if that's the case. So speed, it's like anything else, man. It's very important. It plays a factor, right, in opening up other things. But then again, Do you have guys that understand the complementary nature of football? Do you have guys that are willing to do the things to get other guys open? You have an unselfish football team. There's a lot of things that go into that.
So Xavier Worthy, congratulations, sets the 40 record. He's projected to go in the third round.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens there. Some other news. Lots of NFL news to digest. Mike Evans, not me, I wish, the far more highly paid Mike Evans, two-year deal with Tampa, $52 million, about $35 million of it guaranteed. Initial reaction to that deal.
That's a shit ton of money. Like, at what point did we start believing that receivers, like, okay, so how many games did they win last year?
Nine
games. I mean, Mike Evans is a great player, don't get me wrong. But you're talking about 52, you're talking about what, $26 million a year for a wide receiver? The most dependent of all positions? So 10 other guys have to do their job exceptionally well for you to sniff the football? At what point did, I mean, God bless wide receivers. Seriously. How you guys duped the NFL into believing that you guys are that valuable.
Wove a spell over them.
It is.
Really?
It is witchcraft. How do they do it? Seriously, how did they do that?
So you don't think that there are wide receivers out there that play above the X's and O's, aren't relying upon the system, aren't relying upon the quarterback that is throwing them the football, that just go out and just by their sheer talent alone are able to get themselves open? So that even if you don't have a great quarterback, that quarterback's still going to look better because of the receiver. Not the other way around. You don't think that there are guys out there? You don't think Mike Evans is one of them? Well, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, guys like that?
I think there are guys out there that are huge difference makers.
Then you have to pay him, though, don't you? And isn't the money worth it?
So you tell me the last guy to lead his team from the receiver position that was the driving force to them winning a Super Bowl.
Cooper Kupp.
He was the first guy to lead the league in receptions and yards and all that stuff to win the Super Bowl. You know the guy before that?
Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice was like in 1988 or something.
It was a while. Yep.
I mean, how many of these guys are leading their team? Mike Evans was putting up 1,000-yard seasons on 8-8 teams until Tom Brady got there. Then they won a championship. Tom Brady leaves, and they're right back to 9-8. I just like, hey, listen, man, Mike Evans, that's the market. It's fine. I get it. Good for you, Mike Evans. Mike Evans is a great player. This is not me. I'm not bashing Mike Evans. I think Mike Evans is tremendous. I love Mike Evans. Love watching him play. I think he's a big-time player. I just don't understand. I don't understand the wide receiver market. I don't get how it's become that. Like, the running backs can't get freaking paid. They can't because of the longevity and all those things. And the importance of the running back position, to me, is far more valuable than that of the wide receiver position.
But receivers tend to be more durable, and because of the position they play, they're not as injury prone.
I get that, but it just is mind-boggling to me.
So I'll try to meet you halfway. So part of what I don't understand, when you have been lucky enough to get that franchise quarterback, and you've paid that quarterback,
uh-huh,
and these quarterbacks get paid and they're making gazillions of dollars, and then you still go out and invest in the wide receiver position.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense to me, because if you're lucky enough to have that quarterback and you're paying that quarterback, aren't you paying that quarterback to make average receivers above average?
Yes.
I get if you don't have the quarterback yet.
Right.
If you have questions about the quarterback, then maybe you do want to invest a little bit more in wide receivers in the hopes of propping up that quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But once you found the quarterback, and you, more importantly, paid the quarterback,
right,
that's when I think you dial back on what you're investing in wide receivers.
And my quarterback's going to make my
Correct.
Wide receivers
better. Otherwise, what am I paying you for?
Yeah, so what does it say about Baker Mayfield then? Are they gonna sign Baker Mayfield? Or are they looking for a discount from Baker Mayfield? Well, like what's the deal on that market?
So
then?
Baker, the news coming out over the weekend was that the Patriots are a team to watch as being perhaps interested in Baker Mayfield. They have about $100 million in cash to spend in free agency, so they've got the money to spend. I suppose maybe why people are connecting the dots with Baker to the Patriots is that Alex Van Pelt, the new offensive coordinator of the Patriots, was the offensive coordinator in Cleveland when Baker was playing really well. So maybe people are connecting the dots, or maybe there's some real – maybe it just makes sense. The Patriots are interested in Baker Mayfield because of the Alex Van Pelt connection.
You can't pay Baker Mayfield kind of the franchise quarterback going rate. You can't pay him the $180 million deal, can you?
Do you give a Daniel Jones type deal? Where basically it's like 2 years $80 million or 2 years for $70 million?
No, I'm thinking more like Geno Smith. You know, $25 million a year or whatever.
Right, right.
And now, I mean, we know that this is funny money, so, I mean, anything can happen, but, I mean.
What kind of year did Baker Mayfield have?
I think he had a good year. I think he had a really good year.
All right, maybe better question is, what can he be? What's his ceiling? What's his biggest upside as a quarterback compared to other elite quarterbacks?
Well, I think Baker Mayfield played pretty well this year, right? He played pretty well. They went 9-8. The thing about Baker is Baker during crunch time moments, Baker plays like lights out. He played exceptionally well during some really critical and difficult moments, but there are lapses in his game, and I think he would agree with that. There are lapses where he's not playing as well in those situations. So, again, I mean, do I think of Baker Mayfield as a franchise quarterback? He's on his fourth team. No, I don't think of him that way. Do I think he had a really good year? Yeah. Were they still 9-8? Yeah. Now, there were a lot of other factors in there. You know, they didn't have much of a running game. They're trying to fix their running game. They're, you know, offensive line-wise, there were some different, you know, directions they went in. They took their right tackle, who's tremendous, moved him over to left tackle. He, you know, there was some growing pains there as well. Although he played, you know, Worf's played unbelievably well. Gedeki actually came in at right tackle position, played really well for them. Center was inside, was a little bit of a question mark. So there's some other question marks that went on, but this is part of, you know, the rebuilding process. Once you've gone into cap purgatory and you got to manage a lot of dead cap money and Tom Brady and some other players. So there was a lot of that stuff that went on.
So Baker Mayfield this past year in Tampa, 64% completion, 4,000 yards passing, 28 touchdowns to 10 picks. Going to be a lot of teams are going to be salivating over some of these rookie
really
quarterbacks with the hopes that those quarterbacks put out these kind of numbers. And you can get him now as a free agent. And by the way, he's going to be turning 29. So he's still got a lot of tread on the tires.
But if you're managing a franchise, so okay, you're the GM, you're the GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Baker Mayfield's there. Are you going $40 million a year for him? Are you trying to get him at a discounted price? You trying to get him in the Geno Smith 2-year $50 million deal?
Probably the
same
latter.
Thing.
Yeah,
same
probably
thing
the
you
latter.
Just paid your quarterback.
Yeah,
or probably, your wide receiver.
Probably the latter. Probably more of a Geno Smith deal than a going rate deal for.
But we know there's a lot of dumb teams out there that will spend, you know, I mean, there's a lot of dumb teams that'll go after, you know, if they feel like, hey, man, this solves our issue and it buys us time and people get excited about it. You know, there's a lot of teams that will do that.
Speaking of quarterbacks and what we're paying quarterbacks, there is a sense that Dak Prescott could be ready to reset the quarterback market and that going from the $40, $50 million per year, that we could be looking at Dak as the first $60 million a year quarterback.
Right.
Are you comfortable with the idea of Dak Prescott resetting the quarterback market?
Yeah, this is going to sound interesting. I am comfortable with him resetting the quarterback market because that's the way he's played. Now, it hasn't manifested itself into a championship. And let's face it, you know, in that Green Bay game, Dallas didn't play really well in that playoff game. That said, I don't think it was all Dak Prescott's fault. I mean, he wasn't playing defense. He wasn't getting run, you know, roughshod through. So there's some of that's not his hump, so to speak. you know, to coin a phrase from Sean Payton. But I will say this. If he's willing to sign a really long-term deal that gives them the flexibility like they have in Kansas City to continue to renegotiate it and to manipulate it and to, you know, to give him upfront money so that they can manage the rest of their roster so they can continue to sign guys, then, yeah, I'm okay with him setting the market. I'm never anti-guys getting paid. Now, sometimes I'm looking at the position, I think that they're out of control, but I'm pro getting guys getting paid. And so, and I'm probably a much bigger Dak Prescott fan than most people in America. I think he's a damn good player. I really do. Now, I think their organization is goofy, and I think the way, you know, Jerry Jones conducts himself. I mean, I think when you're Dak Prescott or you're Mike McCarthy and you walk in the locker room and all of a sudden Trey Lance is sitting there and Jerry's going, hey, look what I got. I signed him. You know? I mean, I think like that's a recipe for – that's just a recipe for disaster and you know, and again, lack of empowering your head coach as the boss.
You are a believer – in quarterback rehab, the idea that quarterbacks that were busts in their original place go somewhere else and just get a chance to rehab as a quarterback and come out better for it on the other side. You're a big believer that Sam Darnold is about ready to do that wherever he lands. Mm-hmm. What about Zach Wilson? Last week comes out that Zach Wilson is free to get permission and try to find a trade partner for the Jets. He's free to go out and explore that. Is Zach Wilson a prime candidate for quarterback rehab under the right circumstances?
Oh, yeah. There's no question that coming out when he came out, talent-wise, man, that dude can throw it. That dude's athletic. That dude's got some talent. Now, you got to lose that little bandana because that is just dumb. Like, lose that. You know, and can you humble yourself and can you take hard coaching? And a lot of it depended upon Zach Wilson. Do you really want to do what it takes to be good in this league? And it's not, you know, that becomes, it's not about talent. It's not about all those tangible things you've been gifted with. Now it becomes about the real work. You know, the above the neck, the above the neck work that you have to do to be great for a long period of time in this league. And are you willing to do those things? I mean, that's the big question to me. And, you know, I go back to the Sam Darnold thing that you talked about. Sam had opportunities to go other places and maybe compete for a starting job. And he looked at San Francisco, and Kyle was very frank with him. Kyle Shanahan was frank with him. He said, listen, here's the deal. You're not going to beat out Brock Purdy in practice. He's earned the right to be the starter right now. So you're not going to beat him out in practice, meaning you're not going to beat him out during this preseason. Okay? Now, I'll give you the chance to compete with Trey Lance through practice and through the preseason games. You'll compete with Trey Lance, and you've got a chance to beat him out. But you're not going to beat out Brock Purdy based upon what he did last year and based on, you know, he's going to get the lion's share of the reps in practice and stuff. And we can't get a true evaluation in preseason today. Mm-hmm. And Sam Darnold had a chance to go other places and maybe compete for a starting job. And he also could get more money at those other places. And he looked at his situation and said, I need to actually be coached and I need to grow in a real live NFL offense. And so he chose San Francisco over other opportunities he had.
So would that be that? So when we talk about football rehab, let's screw it down and define it really tight. So you're talking football rehab for a Zach Wilson or maybe a Mac Jones, for example. It means humbling yourself and going to a place where the understanding is you're not going to start.
Right.
You're basically going to be taking a year of rehab.
Right.
To learn and flush out some bad habits, mm-hmm. learn some new ones, come out of rehab and be a new new quarterback.
Yeah, and be ready to play.
Yeah.
And I think that's – I think Zach Wilson, I don't think, will learn the valuable lessons he needs to learn from a game planning standpoint and everything else if you're thrust right back into starting and scrambling around and doing all those things. I mean, I just don't know that's healthy for him. And so I think he needs to go somewhere where he lives in anonymity, where he just goes back to grinding and he learns the game from that perspective. And he doesn't have that kind of celebrity around him. And the mothers in that town are not threatened. There's not, you're not going to, like, it's not going to be, his theme song is not going to be, you remember the 80s band Saga?
Yes. Unfortunately, I do.
They had the one-hit wonder.
One-hit wonder.
Tonight I'm on the loose.
That's right.
No one can stop
easily
me now.
Confused with Lover Boy for that. If you're from that generation, yes.
Tonight we're on the loose.
Yes,
like he can't be on the loose
for
chasing Cougar teammates'
hunter.
Mothers. Like he has got to be in lockdown, totally focused on football, 100%.
Right.
Growing, and you know, but we've seen
all
this,
football,
right?
Leave the MILFs alone,
right? Exactly. But we've seen this, you know, the guy who resonates with me right now is Nick Folk. So, Nick Folk was done, he was like, I'm
Nick
done.
Foles,
yeah, Nick Foles. Nick Folk's the kicker,
right?
Nick Foles is what
I think.
I
just went like
that, yeah. Yeah, I just kicked my foot. Ooh. Nick Foles.
Nick Foles, yeah.
Sorry. Forgive me. So Nick Foles, who was completely done, and Andy Reid reached out to him and basically said, hey, man, come to Kansas City. Let's just take a year of football kind of rehab. Because Nick was going to go into ministry. And he said, just get a full year of football rehab, fall back in love with the game, blah, 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 blah. Remember, he went to... I think, I can't remember where he went, but he was done. So Andy brought him back into Kansas City. Then he went back out to the Eagles.
Yeah.
And Carson Wentz gets hurt. Yeah. He comes in, wins a Super Bowl. They erect a statue.
Goes toe-to-toe with Tom Brady.
Right.
Awesome.
And just does unbelievable stuff. Then he goes to Jacksonville and goes right back into quarterback
purgatory. So a lot of pressure on Sam Darnold, because if he can
– yeah.
sign on with somebody, do well, this is only going to really kind of create that momentum out there that, hey, there are plenty of quarterbacks that were sort of cast aside as busts that maybe if we give them that football rehab, you know, there might be something there to salvage. Hey, listen, we love to have fun here on this show. We love to doink around, but we lost a legend in this game, a close friend of yours in ESPN's Chris Mortensen.
Yeah, I spent 16 years doing TV with Chris Mortensen. And, you know, I loved his family. He loved people, man. He was such a great mentor to just everybody who came into ESPN and guys that weren't a part of ESPN. And he loved Jesus, man. And he was just a guy that was a dear friend. And, like... A couple of years ago, man, he just calls me out of the blue. One of our colleagues at ESPN goes, hey, man, this guy's having a tough time. And, you know, yada, he gave me a couple of just little things and said, hey, can we just pray together on the phone for him? You know, and that's the character of who Chris Mortensen was, on top of being a tremendous reporter. And one of the things that always hung with me in regards to Chris was, in a day and age, and he lived in this day and age where everybody's so enamored by being first, gotta be first, gotta have the news out there. Chris, and one of the reasons probably he had such great relationships, is he wasn't worried about being first as much as he was concerned with being right and making sure the information was correct, in that nobody could come back and accuse him or look at it like, hey, you got part of it right, but you didn't get the whole thing right. So for him, fact checking and getting multiple sources to confirm what was going on was the most important thing to him. And And that's why he didn't burn bridges and why he was so trusted and why he was so connected in his time as a reporter and his time with ESPN. And so Chris Mortensen, one of the truly great people and missed, not forgotten, and we'll see him again.
Good. Definitely, if you're looking at the Mount Rushmore of the information people in football, right. And as our thirst for football knowledge and information has only grown over the years, you think about the role that these information people play, and Mort easily on the Mount Rushmore.
Sure, he was the
information guy.
He's the OG. He's the original.
He really is.
He is, and all the other guys that have come after him, and he did such a great job of mentoring those guys, all of them, and helping those guys along the way, and he was just very much that way. He was very connected that way, and completely secure in his position. Completely secure in what he did. Like, I love that about him, that he was so secure in what he did that he didn't mind at all giving people the tricks of the trade and helping them along to do the same thing.
Heard a lot of stories about that from people who, like, hey, he was so influential in my career and mentoring me and helping me out. He didn't know me from Adam, and yet he talk to me at a training camp or something like that. You're hearing all these stories come out, which is a real true testament to the man.
Yeah, for sure. No question about it. Hey,
good
listen,
stuff.
For everybody involved in the Stink Truth podcast, we appreciate you so much. Mike, thank you so much. To my buddy Chris Mortensen, I love you, and I'll see you in heaven. And to everybody who listens, man, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. I know we get loose occasionally, and we do some things that are maybe a little bit, maybe stomp it on the line, but the bottom line is we appreciate you guys. So take care. Tell somebody, call somebody that you know, and tell them you love them. Because, the interesting thing, I told my wife just yesterday, I was like, when I found out the Chris Mortensen news, I go, he was on my heart like last week, and I didn't call. I was like, I got to talk to Mort. I wonder how he's doing, because I didn't know. And, one of those things that he knows I love him, but one of those things I wish I had just reached out. So reach out to somebody you love. All right. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you next week or later on this week. Yeah, later on this week. All right. Anyhow, whatever. Later.